Good morning. It is wonderful to stand up here for a few moments and look out at so many wonderful and beautiful faces, smiling and glad to be here. I know that this day across the world today is a special day that many people are celebrating, maybe for the only day in their life or in their year that they celebrate the resurrection of Christ. But we're grateful, we're thankful to all the people, all the believers in this world who want to set aside time to remember Jesus Christ, remember all that He is and all that He means to us. And so we are excited. I'm excited about today and sharing some things with you. I'm going to be out of Matthew chapter 27. So if you want to look at chapter 27 of the book of Matthew with me, we're going to read a few verses out of here, and I want to share a few things with you. We think about Easter, about the resurrection, but I want to go back just a little bit before that. And this morning, I want to share with you something that I've never really done. A friend of mine and I were talking recently about the centurion. And you know, the centurion, that title is given to us a number of times throughout the New Testament. And I want to share with you, though, a very specific instance where a centurion at the time of the crucifixion. And what I want to do this morning is I want to just look through his eyes at what was going on. I don't know if you've ever done that or ever thought about that. Let's just do it together this morning. A little bit about a centurion. You may know about it, but here's a little thing that I typed out of one of the books that I have. A centurion was a Roman officer in command of 100 men. Cornelius was a Gentile convert. The first Gentile convert was a centurion. Other centurions are mentioned throughout the Bible in Matthew and Luke and Acts. Centurions mentioned in the New Testament were uniformly spoken of in terms of praise, whether in the Gospels or in the book of Acts. It's interesting to compare this with the statement of Polybius that centurions were chosen by merit and so were men remarkable, not so much for their daring courage as for their deliberation, constancy, and strength of mind. Dr. McClear's New Testament History. And as I read that little quote, I began thinking about this man, this centurion, and who he was. And so as we begin this passage in Matthew, I want you to think just a little bit about this man, this centurion. And you think about, he's a Gentile, so that makes a little bit different about what's going on. The things that are happening in his world, in his mind, are not the same as all those Jews that are surrounded at this day of this crucifixion. He's a soldier, intense training, not unlike what our soldiers in this country would go through today. Lots and lots and lots of training and commitment to the things that they need to be about. And this man climbed the ranks, if you will, through those words, deliberation. An ability to think, an ability to think on his feet, you might say. Someone who would make sound decisions when things would come up in his life and in his command of those men around him. And he had to make decisions all the time. He did them well. Experienced man. Able to weigh evidence. Constancy. He was not easily swayed. He was one who made commitment and he held true with those commitments in his life. Strength of mind. Think about the intelligence that this man had to be. A student, a learner, someone who was always seeking to understand more and was always questioning everything that went around and everything that was going on in the world around him. He wasn't willing to just take the status quo. He was wanting to ask questions. And maybe he sat quietly and listened to what was going on, or maybe he would stop and ask some questions about things that were going on, but he was a man who was dedicated his life to learning things that are going on around him. He was a commander of men. He was a different man. Not an average man, maybe the most unique or one of the most unique men on that day that the Lord was being crucified. What is he thinking? What's going through his mind? Have you ever thought about that? Look at Matthew chapter 27 with me. In verse 27, then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole Roman cohort around him. They stripped him and they put a scarlet robe on him. And after twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and with a reed in his right hand, and they knelt down before him and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." They began spitting on him and took the reed and began to beat him on the head. And after they had mocked him, they took the scarlet robe off and put his own garments back on him and led him away to crucify him. As they were coming out, they found a man of Cyrene named Simon, who they pressed into service to bear the cross. When they had come to the place called Golgotha, which means place of a skull, they gave him wine to drink mixed with gall. And after tasting it, he was unwilling to drink. And when they had crucified him, they divided up his garments among themselves by casting lots. And sitting down, they began to keep watch over him. And above his head, they put the charge against him, which read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." At that time, two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right and one on the left. And those passing by were hurling insults and abuse at him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross." And in the same way, the chief priests also, along with the scribes and the soldiers, were mocking him and saying, "He saved others, he cannot save himself. He is the King of Israel. Let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe in him." He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now, if he delights in him. For he said, "I am the Son of God." The robbers who had been crucified with him were insulting him with the same words. Now, from the sixth hour, darkness fell upon all the land until the ninth hour. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," that is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And some of those who were standing there heard it and began saying, "This man is calling for Elijah." And immediately one of them ran, and taking a sponge, he filled it with sour wine, and he put it on a reed, and he gave him a drink. But the rest of them said, "Now let us see if Elijah will come to save him." And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice, and he yielded up his spirit. And behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split, and the tombs were open, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. Now think about the man. We know a little bit about his history. We know a little bit about who he is, and he's a centurion, and he's a trained soldier, and he's all of those kinds of things, but he's an intelligent man. He's one who's listening. He's one who's watching. He's one who's doing everything that he can to kind of understand. Now, this day that he gets up and he knows what he's going to be about, I'm sure he was one of those ones that were at the trial. He's one of the ones that's gone all the way through, because he's been given command over taking care of this situation, of this crucifixion, of this criminal, if you will, of putting him to death. Not something that he hasn't known in his life, not something that maybe he's done dozens or even maybe hundreds of times in his life. But today would be different. And maybe today he went from maybe a boredom, if you will, to something a little more, a heightened sense of expectation, because he was there at the trial and he saw how mean and ugly and nasty and angry the crowds were, and how some of them wanted to crucify him right then, and they were willing to sacrifice someone so horrible, turn that person free to crucify a man that was proven to be innocent. And not a single person could actually bring up anything worthy of death. So there was a man that understood the civil unrest that was going on in the community around them, and he understood his duty. And then he watched, if you will, he watched either his soldiers under him. I don't know that he was involved in it. He very well could have been, but they began casting lots, or maybe throwing dice. We would maybe understand that a little more. But gambling over his clothes. And he's watching that. He's watched the trial. He's watched the soldiers. He's watched all of these things going on. And what's going through his mind? What's happening in his mind? Change is going on. changed like nothing he's ever witnessed before. The graves, it said, are opening up, and saints, believers are coming out. All of these things are happening, and we see that change, and we see the trial in over. All of those things that happened in that trial, and we could say it was kind of like a kangaroo court almost, if you will. All the things that they did to Christ, all the false charges that were brought, all of those kinds of things happening. Jesus' walk of shame ended, unable to even carry his own cross. And then finally they nail him to that cross, and they put the cross in the ground, and they set it up, and they hang the sign over top of him to embarrass even all the peoples around. And the centurion is still watching, and he's still looking, and he's still evaluating and questioning everything that's going on. Does he know a little bit? I guarantee you he knows. If he's really a student, if he's really an intelligent man, he knows who he's getting ready to crucify. He's looked it up. He's asked some questions. He's heard evidence, who this man is, what he's about, where he's come from. He's done all of those kinds of things. And so now, all of this information is coming on him. And he's not quite sure exactly what to do with all of it. And so he sits quietly, waiting and watching. And then he hears all the people funneling by, walking past Christ hanging on that cross, and they're hurling insults, it says, at him, wagging their head, the most despicable things that they could do. And so he's watched people, his own soldiers, spit on him. Maybe he did as well. And now he's watching Jews, his own people, people that have grown up with this man, that have saw him and watched him and witnessed his life. And they're going by and they're saying the cruelest, most evil, godless things that they can come up with. And they're hurling those things at him. And with the arrogance that wagging their head, you're far below us. Look at you hanging on that. That is the worst possible death that can happen to a man, and you are the one suffering with it. You deserve what you got. You deserve to die a death like you're dying, one that's going to cause you to go through so much pain and suffering, and you deserve all of those things. And the centurion is listening, and he's watching, and he's taking it all in. But those are unlearned people. Those are the ignorant. Those are the crowd that will believe anything and follow anybody. We know that. Crowds are that way. But then along comes the spiritual leaders. Those men that are supposed to be intelligent and thoughtful and caring and kind and loving and all of those things. And yet they say the same things. He saved others, but he cannot save himself. And so, think about it. The things that they're saying, we witnessed him save other people. We witnessed him healing people and doing good every single day of his life. Loving people, touching people we would have nothing to do with. And they too are hurling, mocking words at him. Let him come down if he can. Let him come down off of that cross. And if he can do that, then we'll believe. And the centurion sits listening and watching it all. Who are these people? Why are they doing these things? The Jews, his people, his family, his friends, his neighbors, they hate him so much so that they want him dead. Why should he care? Why should a centurion who's given the duty of putting this man that nobody wants to be around to death, why should he care about anything that's going on? Why should he care about those spiritual leaders of the Jews? Why should he care about the masses? Why should he care about anything? Why shouldn't he just join in with all of them? But he's thinking, and he's watching, and he's listening, and he doesn't quite understand. And then all of a sudden it says, at the sixth hour, noon, darkness covers all of the land. And all this information he's getting, all of the good things that he's heard that this man has done, and the way he's loved people, and the way he's treated people, and how we all want to be treated. And now he's hanging there. He's helped, made his men drive the nails through his arms and his feet and hang him on that cross. And he's watching, and all of a sudden, from the middle of the day, when the sun should be out shining bright, the land becomes completely dark. And for a few hours, this goes on, and the centurion is watching and evaluating and thinking about what's happening. This has never happened in his life. He's never witnessed this, no matter how many dozens or hundreds of these crucifixions, these executions that he has performed, he has never seen anything like this. And then he hears Christ calling out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me here among all of these people for all of this to go on? Why is this happening?" The flesh is calling out. The centurion is listening. And the centurion watches and waits to see what's actually going to happen. And then I think it interesting that he says he cried out again in a loud voice and he gave up his spirit. Or as Luke records, he'll say, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Now we know that it wasn't time for a man physically to be so exhausted that he's going to die at this time. He had enough strength in him to pull himself up and to talk out loud for everyone to hear. And so the centurion is listening to every word that he says. What does he say? He heard him say what? "I'm giving my life. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. I give myself to you." We sing a song, he could have called 10,000 angels. And the centurion, maybe he didn't sing that song, but we do today. And we think about that words, and we think about how Christ very easily could have done that. And he could have called the angels to come down and take him off the cross, and he could have done that right then. He could have taken all the rights of deity that he had given up already in the past, and he could have made anything he wanted happen right then, but he didn't, and the centurion was listening. What is he doing? "Into your hands I commit my spirit." He gave up his spirit. And a centurion watched the last breath leave his body. And he's watching. What does this mean? What does all of these things mean? He's asking himself. He had to. There's no other way. Can you imagine? Put yourself in that centurion's shoes that day, and all the things that he was supposed to do, and all the things that he heard, and all of the things that he said, and how would you come out on the other side of that? What would happen in your life? You have to be questioning what's going on. And he's questioning. Look at verse 54 with me in our text. "But now the centurion, those who were keeping guard over Jesus, when they saw the earthquake and the things that were happening, they became very frightened." Frightened. That probably is an understatement. I don't know about you, but if I'm in the middle of something, I've just put someone to death that everyone else is calling a son, the Son of God, the Savior, the King, all of those things, and I've just put him to death, and all of a sudden, everything gets dark, and the world begins shaking, and tombs begin opening, and people are coming out of those tombs, and all of those things are happening. I think I might be more than just a little bit frightened. I'm ready to leave and go, "I don't want anything to do with this man. It's too late. It's too late." He's given up his breath, his last breath. "They became very frightened and said, 'Truly, this was the Son of God.'" Now understand, as we would want this to mean, he is the Son of God, may not be what the centurion actually said. He may have said, this is a son of God, or a son of a little g God. Okay? He's not giving credit that Christ is the Messiah. Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah. He's not exactly saying that. But he's saying, this man is righteous. This man is holy. This man is different than any man I've ever been around in my life. He's changed people's views. He's made people to stop and think about things that they've never thought of in their life. This is a righteous man. This is a holy man. This is someone different than any of us have ever laid our eyes on in our life. And what he's saying is, I want to know who he really is. Maybe he was embarrassed that he was there. Maybe he was rethinking his commitment to the Roman Empire and to the military and to all those things that they said, you have to do this. And he's looking back at his life and saying, I wish I had never been a part of this. This is a righteous and holy man, and I should have never done what I did to this man. I don't know exactly what he's thinking, but I know this. It says very clearly that he said, this man is different. This is not who I thought he was. This is not the man that to just dismiss in the morning and think it's just another person to hang up on a cross and kill. That's not who this man is. What do you see when you think about the crucifixion? What do you see when you see that picture in your mind, and maybe you're that one as we gathered around this table every first day of the week, and you close your eyes and you begin thinking about what Christ did and hanging on that cross and everything that that meant? What do you see if you're the centurion and watching him hung on that cross? What do you see? What does the world see? Maybe they're wanting to know more. Who is he? What is he about? What did he come for? And then, the most powerful thing ever happened. Passage that Kyron read for us earlier. Those ladies went to the tomb. I don't know how they thought they were going to remove that exceedingly great stone away from the tomb, but it had already been removed. And there was no body. Guess who was there guarding that tomb? Those soldiers. I can't believe that centurion didn't have any part of that group of men, whether he chose them or what. They're going to answer to him. He's been through the whole process with them. Now he sees something different. The tomb is empty. And the angels there said, why are you looking for the living among the dead? You're right, that man that you saw, that man that you questioned, that man that you were listening to, all the things that are going on about him and all the information that is coming to you, and maybe it's an overload in your life, but you realize that God promised he was going to send someone. He promised that person was going to die, and he promised that man was going to be raised from the dead so that he would take care of all the issues and all the problems that we have of mankind forever and ever. Righteous, Son of God, both telling of who our Savior is. Isn't it interesting, once again, that the centurion watching and listening hears Jesus give his life for us? His life was never taken, it was given. He didn't have to go through it. It didn't matter if the entire Roman army was there. They could have done nothing if Jesus didn't want it to happen. And he gave his life, and the centurion is listening to every moment of it. He gave himself into your hands. I commit my spirit, Father. Our Father. Same Father today as has been here forever. May we ever be reminded that our Lord, who was raised from the grave by the Father, who allowed him to give his own life for us, he ever lives to make intercession for us. No matter what we've done in the past, no matter how horrible things seem, no matter how many insults we've hurled at him while he was on the cross, none of that mattered, because God is powerful enough to have raised him and removed the stone and pulled him out of the grave to live forever again for us. Today is a powerful day around the world because people are remembering the resurrection. Don't ever forget the life that Christ gave for us. Don't ever forget the life, every moment of life that He spent giving for us. When He talked to that Samaritan woman when He shouldn't have and told her how much He loved her by talking to her. Don't forget that. When He talked to those lepers or touched the blind and did all of those things, don't forget those things because He did that for us. Don't forget the life that He chose to give. When He said, "Father, into Your hands I commit my spirit. I know what I have to do, Father. I know this. I know I have to believe and trust in You. And I have so much faith that I'm willing to do that." This morning, Christ is no longer in the grave. And we can believe that. Do you believe that? Not just on Easter, but every day of our life. Has He changed you from the inside out? I hope and I pray that that centurion met with someone in the days ahead and he heard everything and he heard about that Christ and His resurrection and what it actually meant for him, and that he thought and he contemplated and he studied about it and he said, "I saw it all and I'm on board. Regardless of what kind of work I do or what government I work for, it doesn't matter. I'm giving my life to this man because he truly was a righteous and holy man." As you leave this morning, you know the whole story, not just part of it. What kind of life will you live when you walk through the doors? To go about the rest of your life today, dinner, family, all of those wonderful things that you'll be a part of today. And those are wonderful things. But I want you to think about the family that God bought and purchased, the blood that He shed on that cross. How has it changed your life? If you haven't given your life to Him, why not? If you haven't become a child of God, why not? There's no reason for it. Even the centurion, amongst all those people, saw He was different than anyone else he'd ever come in contact with. And He still is. There's only one Christ. There's only one who was given for you. There's only one who died for you. And there's only one who is resurrected for you for all eternity. Are you ready to give your life to Him? If you're ready to do that today, we ask you to come right now while we stand and we sing.
Your broken life, oh, for Christ's sin, will create anew, a coal again.